just get to beat the way they are and safely hold them as they are. Sometimes we try to manipulate hearts to beat the way we want, rather than letting people's hearts communicate what they need. It takes courage just to listen to a heart exactly as it is and not try to manipulate its beat. Sometimes it's tempting to drum our thinking into others instead of letting people march to their own drum. We get to be like Jesus to people as they march to their own drum. And it's only Jesus who gets to change drums. It's strange how the world, your day, can feel like a minefield. I tell that to my friend. I don't tell her how there's this lump in my throat, and I'm getting weary of being brave. How health needs for your children can chafe you a bit raw. How every step forward can feel like battling hurricane winds, and the whole world around you can feel like it's fracturing, angry, and polarizing and loud. And she whispers it to me, "Stego, I will always be your Stego." Stego. It's become my shorthand for, "I'll be your safe place." How can one word mean what we all need? I'll be like a roof to you. I'll be like a home to you. I'll be a safe place when you feel like you have no place. When you need a place to go, I'll be your Stego. When you're tired of how the winds blow, you can count on me, a Stego. When you feel like life's been whipped into a tornado, you have a place to go, because I'm always, always, always your Stego. Love bears all things because love is a roof. Love is making a safe place. Love is always feeling like there's a home to come into out of the winds. Love is Stego. It comes like the quietest breath through the spruce trees standing in the ebbing snow. People have broken hearts, so accept brokenness. The world may feel broken, and the headlines may feel loud, but there are people who break the winds, who are a roof, who are Stego in storms. The February winds in the orchard keep warming, the sun braving winter growing stronger, a testament that winds and winters and ways can always change. And the reaching limbs of the spruce trees are their own kind of Stego, making places that break the wind. You can see all the lost sparrows gathering there, safe. For reflection, whose brokenness are you being called to be Stego for today? What would that look like? If a meaningful, abundant life is about relationship, koinonia, how are you a safe place who finds, reminds, remakes for broken hearts? Consider a time when you have felt lost or forgotten or broken. How is God your always Stego? How has he been finding, reminding, remaking you? Devotion 24, Sacrificial Givenness. This is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. 1 John 3:16. Light from the rising moon splashes across the wall, across a framed photo of our wedding day, taken in the barn because it rained that day. We had been in need of a roof. I've never stopped being in need. The farmer, he'd written out a check for the hydro, the vet, the phone today, in this big blue inky scrawl. I saw him sign his name, hunt for a stamp. I didn't say anything, my arms full of wet laundry for the line, tired jeans, faithful plaids. After the sun dried them out in the grove of ash trees, after I slung Grandma Nellie's wicker basket on my hip to go unclip their warmth from the line. I found him dangling on an aluminum ladder at the corner of the house, a tool belt around his middle, working on the eave at the edge of the roof. What are you up to now? It's the way he wears his work, his dirt, like he's broken out of the earth, his jeans looking like he's wrangled for a piece of the sod. He doesn't even look down from the ladder. I hear the smile in his words. Loving you. Two words, and he'd stop my heart. Loving you. Every to-do list can be a to-love list. I stood there looking up at him on top of that ladder, and suddenly I didn't simply want an empty bucket list, as much as I want a to-love list for all this. This could be us. The wind could be in our hair like this, the sky wide with hope over us, the trials but stones on the way, and all the stones but steps higher up and deeper into God. We could be filled on the comfort food, not of the world, but the Word, enclosed in the broken and given of a vulnerable communion. And love himself could make us into love, pour us out, and make our hearts into a roof for others to absorb their beating storms. Stego, we could be a roof, a safe place. Ours could be a vocation of translation. Every enemy made an esteemed guest. Every face encountered made the face of Christ. All this living made into the cruciformity of Christ. We could be buckets poured out and crushed into bread to feed the busted. And we could be dead to all ladders and never go higher, but only lower. To the lonely, the least, the longing, and the lost. That right there would be our love song. He looks down the ladder at me, looks down from the edge of the roof. That four-day-old stubble of his carries a grin that speaks what you can only feel where the chambers of the heart meet. Yeah, there are those big banners, social media, camera-rolling moments, with some imagined soundtrack building to a thundering crescendo, times when we think we'd all pour out our lives, throw ourselves out of a plane, in front of a train, show no restraint, and brave the howl of the hurricane to rescue love, to save our love. But real love doesn't always look like that kind of heroism. That's more like Hollywood. Real love looks like a sacrificing savior. That's the holy truth. The real romantics know that stretch marks are beauty marks, and that different shaped women fit into the different shapes of men's souls, and that real romance is really sacrifice. God is love. And because God is love, he gets to define love. This is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us. Love is not always agreement with someone, but it is always sacrifice for someone. Love only has logic, only has meaning, when it takes the form of the cross. For reflection, how is your life's calling a vocation of translation? Every enemy made an esteemed guest, every face encountered made the face of Christ, and all this living made into the cruciformity of Christ. How is your love looking cruciform? Because this is the abundant life. Devotion 25, Boring Love. Though it is the smallest of all seeds, yet when it grows, it is the largest of garden plants and becomes a tree. So the birds come and perch in its branches. Matthew 13:32. You do something great with your life when you do all the small things with his great love. That black inked cross, the one daily written on my wrist, It might cut into me like a tender surgery, break me and remake me, reform me, cruciform. It all seemed embarrassingly small, how I ended up daily being the gift, complimenting an insecure kid, doing a messy chore, making a tired man's bed, taping a scrawled love note to a smudged and splattered mirror. Why hadn't somebody showed up a long time ago in a three-piece suit to tell me those small acts of intentional love actually trigger the brain's receptor networks for oxytocin, the soothing hormone of maternal bonding? That little acts of large love actually release dopamine, that hormone associated with positive emotions and a natural high. Why hadn't anyone told me, bend low in small acts of love, and you get literally high? Real love dares you to the really dangerous. Die in the diminutive. Be broken and given in the small. The moment so small no one may applaud at all. Pour out your life in laundry rooms and over toilets and tubs. Pour out your life in the back streets, in the back room, back behind the big lights. Pour out your life in small moments, because it's only those moments that add up to the monumental. The only way to live a truly remarkable life is not to get everyone to notice you, but to leave noticeable marks of His love everywhere you go. Love is so large that it has to live in the holiness of very small moments of sacrifice. Love demands that you lie down and die in the small moments, the moments not scripted for screens, but written into the inner hem of a heart that can change how someone breathes. In the night stillness of our bedroom, His breath is warm and close. His fingers find mine. Our hands lace in the black, the promise we keep making, even in near sleep. I will let myself be bent into a roof for you, a shelter for you. I will be your roof. I will be your stego, your safe place. I will love you. It's this. I lie there thinking how it's all this. The real romantics are the boring ones. They let another heart bore a hole deep into theirs. The broken way is the beautiful, boring way. The way two lives touch and go deeper into time with each other. One act of sacrificial love after another. The best love could be a broken, boring love. Letting your heart be bore into another heart. One small act of love at a time. The way you touch the small of his back in the middle of the night when he can't find relief from the fever. The way he saves you a piece of strawberry pie. The way you hold your tongue quiet as a way of holding him. The way you slow and look right into the eyes of a child every time she speaks so they feel seen and known and safe. This is the love we all seek. And love is simple and small and complicated. And a kind of boring, and the largest of all, and love is all there is. It comes quiet. Real love is in the really small gestures, the way your hands, your feet move to speak your heart. For reflection, how does it change your perspective to be broken and given in the small? In the moment so small, no one may applaud at all. But God sees. How are your hands and feet in life speaking the abundant love in your heart? Devotion 26, Practicing Presence. Be very glad, for these trials make you partners with Christ in His suffering, so that you will have the wonderful joy of seeing His glory when it is revealed to all the world. 1 Peter 4:13, New Living Translation. Yeah, so Brother Lawrence has his sacred spuds, and I've got this bag of rotting carrots pulling up a burial blanket of fleecing mold in the bottom of the fridge, and a bunch of girls making brownies in a sink overflowing with a motley crew of pots that have lost handles. You can lose your precarious way by 10 in the morning. Yeah, they can crank the speakers right up on Sunday morning, play the worship music so loud your inner cochlea quakes for mercy, and they can flash the 3-point outline in pixels up there on the screen before the final prayer. But everybody ends up just going home to the kitchen to find something to eat. Brother Lawrence and his potatoes are on to something. Theology can be talked about on Sundays, recorded at conferences, but it's lived in kitchens, or it dies at tables. Doctrine in the kitchen is doctrine in real life. Don't belittle everyday pots and pans. They are the means to carry theology into the everyday of our lives. The mother in the kitchen is the one who can actually give life to the words of the speaker on the platform. Platform words are dead words until brave people live them out in the kitchen. Two cousins pour and stir over the stove loud and lovely. I count out a bunch of sweet spuds across the counter. There is light at the window. What had that Brother Lawrence said in the practice of the presence of God? The time of business does not with me differ from the time of prayer, and in the noise and clatter of my kitchen, while several persons are at the same time calling for different things, I possess God in his great tranquility, as if I were upon my knees. And yeah, there are kids, and there is loud, and there is clatter, but this is all that matters. When you have an overwhelmed world, you don't have to have an underwhelmed soul if Christ fills the thoughts. Exhaling can feel like the beginning of a divine conversation. I exhale again. The girls measure out the butter, ask for a spatula. I rummage through a drawer, looking for the peeler for the sweet potatoes. God's presence needs no practicing, because God's presence has no end. God's presence needs no practicing because it's perfect and it's present everywhere. God's presence needs no practicing. We're the ones who need to practice waking to it. God's presence doesn't need practicing. His presence needs to be breathed. Exhale. You don't practice his presence. You practice being present to his presence in this present moment. Practicing the presence of God is the practice of self-discipline. In the midst of everything calling for my attention, the point is to never stop leaning into the one who is calling me. Can you find the measuring cup? Shalom holds the recipe card. Got it, her cousin laughs, holds vintage orange Tupperware up like a trophy. I peel another strip off a sweet potato, and there it is, like a peeling of the heart. You miss Jesus when you don't look for him in the right places. Your soul misses Jesus when more time is spent on Facebook than facing the book. Your soul misses Jesus when more time is spent on Instagram feeds than feeding on his word. Your soul misses Jesus when more time is spent on Twitter chats than chatting with Jesus, whom you claim to follow. Balanced social media can be a soul meal. Too much social media can be soul suicide. Exhale. The girls lean into each other over a 9x13 pan. I can feel that. How a soul can do that. Every Christ follower is in the same business, to kill busyness and make it your business to talk endlessly with God. It's like the rhythm of breathing. His presence, my gift. His presence, my gift. Exhale. The girls look out the bowl, and a big brother comes grinning for something to feed his hunger. And there is light across the counters, across the table, across the cutting board, across the potatoes. There is this light that can saturate anything. For reflection, are there ways your broken heart is missing Jesus? What might you do to change that? How are you living as the gift of his presence? Imagine living the next 24 hours as the gift of his presence. How might that look like more of the abundant life? Devotion 27, Grieving Brokenness. When he heard this, Jesus said, "This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." John 11:4. Kneeling on the garden path, sun on my neck, in a brown and dead patch of brittle kale, I keep tracing the outline of the bricks, finding a way. My friend Elizabeth has died, her life poured right out, and I feel like I have failed to love like I wanted to. And ever and always, I'd about give my eye, teeth, and left arm for more time to get it more deeply right and less painfully wrong. What happens if you just let the brokenness keep coming? Surrender. Let the wave of it all break over you and wash you up at the foot of that cross. What if I lived like I believed it? Never be afraid of broken things, because Christ is redeeming everything. What if I began to feel? What if I let the dam of feelings break? It was coming, and there was no stopping it. Grieving how plans change is part of the plan to change us. Elizabeth has broken something in me. She'd broken me open to this reaching out to trace the face of suffering, to feel along its features. And I hadn't wanted to recoil, but at times it felt too much, too vulnerable, to live broken into life like that. What if I didn't recoil from this? What if I didn't pull back from the pain? I wanted to be more patient, to never lose it, to always have it together, to keep calm and sane. I've wanted more flashes of wisdom in the heat of the moment, when I had no bloody idea of what was the best thing to do. I've wanted fewer nights crawling into bed feeling like a failure, who always gets it wrong when everyone else seems to get it right. I've wanted to take the gold medal in living well and loving large and being enough to be wanted. Instead, I've been the person who escapes behind bathroom doors, the person who turns on the water so no one can hear the howl, the person who fights what is and struggles to surrender, who completely ups and forgets how to break into givenness. And there's the razor edge of it. I am not someone who once walked nice and neat on this narrow way and then suddenly didn't. I'm not someone who just tripped and stumbled a bit and then pulled herself back up on the narrow path. I'm the person who's always been shattered on the inside, knowing brokenness deep in the marrow and ache of me. The one who has wasted days, years, despairing and replaying the past, who's let lies live loud in my head, held grudges and grown bitter, who's cut myself down, literally, and known depression, suicidal and self-sabotaging, self-destruction, and been convinced she would so keenly feel like a broken failure in the end, that she'd wish she'd never been born. Feelings of failure can feel like this bad rash. Scratch one failure and all you can see is an outbreak spreading all over you. Can I choke it out? How this trying to love, how this surrendering to being cruciform, which is what love is, can feel like being lashed to an altar and your bare back stinging a bit raw. How there are times you'd like to cut and break free and run, only to realize you'd be running into meaninglessness. which would only hurt and break you more? What if you just want desperately, in spite of everything, for someone to remember how hard you've really tried? There are days when the sharp edge of self-condemnation cuts you so deep that you can be reaching, grasping, but can't seem to remember to believe that he believes in you. God, make us the remembering people. Maybe the only way to begin breaking free is to lay open your willing hands and bear witness to the ugly mess of your scars, to trace them slowly and remember what he says about you, even if you forget. This is about bravely letting your darkness be a canvas for God's light. This happened that the glory of God might be shown through even you. What if the remembering of your brokenness comes in remembering that your trying isn't what matters the most, because his scars have written your name and your worth over all of yours? There's this breaking, the spilling for all that hasn't been, all that I haven't been. The lament and the grieving and the repentance all mingle. Feelings are meant to be fully felt and then fully surrendered to God. The word emotion comes from the Latin for movement, and all feelings are meant to move you toward God. What if I fully surrendered to becoming cruciform, so I could feel along my scars, along my own scarred face, and know my name is beloved? I don't know if there's any other way to break into abundant living unless I come to know this. All this failing rises from the ground of the kitchen garden toward heaven. Bits of dead kale leaves breaking and falling in hardly a whisper of wind. The garden path bricks feel like a kind of beckoning forward under my tracing fingertips, my bent knees. I don't turn away. Grief can feel like an aching love song. For reflection, how does it change your life to know that you're trying is not what matters the most, but that Christ's scars have written your name and your worth over all of your scars? How are you fully surrendered to becoming cruciform, having a life that is cross-shaped so you can feel along your scars and know your own name is beloved? Devotion 28, Compassionate Abundance. Be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, as God in Christ forgave you. Ephesians 4:32, ESV. If you lean in close, you can hear it. Folks despairing from rejection right now, some conflicted and confused, some deeply grieving. There is deep divide and painful brokenness all around us. There is very real fear and pain, and the call is always not to dismiss each other, only take time to listen to each other. When we feel forgotten and dismissed, we become trapped in pain. And how many people feel painfully forgotten and dismissed? Many people hold their positions the way they do because of genuine fear for their future. And then different people end up genuinely feeling their own kind of fear for their futures. Strange how that is. We are all the same kind of different. Family may disagree, but they still agree that they are a family. Maybe the way forward in the midst of division and the brokenness is always to give forward. Maybe right now, instead of giving someone a piece of your mind, it's far better to give them pieces of your heart. Maybe right now, we go forward by giving it forward today. And maybe it never mattered more than it does today. Be the gift and give someone the benefit of the doubt. Involved in a group conversation, go out of your way to make sure each person feels included. Grab a group of friends and serenade strangers on the street. Reach out across dividing lines and say hi to a friend who might be a little different than you. Let them know you love them for who they are, not how they hold certain positions. Take a photo of anything you see that reminds you of someone and send it their way. It's a healing way to say thinking of you. Stand on a street corner for 10 minutes and give compliments to everyone you see. Reach out to someone today who is feeling hurt, who is grieving. Listen well. Find one person today who is other, who thinks differently, lives differently, sees things differently. And just do that. Listen to each other. Listen to the other. Maybe if each of us, everywhere, could find just one person who is the other today, and really listen until the other feels understood. This is what it means when Jesus said, love one another, to love the other. Absurd comes from the Latin word surdus, which means deaf. Things will only become more absurd if we don't listen, but instead grow deaf to each other. Whenever we deafen, demonize, and dehumanize anybody, we can legitimize anything. It's a Latin word that means listening, audire, that gives us the word obedient. An abundant life is a listening life. Listening fully to each other is how to be fully obedient to God. The only way to a sincerely God-obedient life is to live a sincerely listening life. In the midst of the brokenness, now is the time for such a time. To listen to each other, so that we can be known for how well we love each other. This might be a step toward the healing we all agree is needed desperately and desperately wanted. We may not understand each other, but we can stand with each other. Instead of dismissing each other out of hand, now is the time to reach out a hand and deeply listen to each other. If we all made it a practice to genuinely listen every day to one person with whom we disagree, we'd get to genuinely practice our faith. Maybe God's purposes come not so much through power, but through the compassion of God's people. Compassion is more powerful than power. Ask Jesus, who chose to die on a cross. Compassion, co-passion, literally means co-suffering. And co-suffering with the suffering is how Jesus chose to transform suffering. If we could be compassionate with each other, co-suffer with each other, we could be part of the healing of each other. If we are passionate about the church having any transformational power in the world, then the call of the church is to be compassionate, to live cruciform. Formed like a cross, we take the form of reaching hands, open ears, listening hearts. Because our God is with us, we will be with each other. Because our God is on the throne, we will not spout off with each other, but will be on our knees for each other. Because our compassionate God is all-powerful, we will be compassionate with each other because this is the way of the most powerful. Because our God is close to the brokenhearted, we will be near to the hearts of all the broken of all of us. If you lean in close, in the warming autumn days, you can hear it. Like the heartbeat of hope. People coming together to give grace to each other, to be the gift to each other. The brokenness of things being remembered in the remembering that there's no way to deny anyone a lavish glass of grace from which we ourselves have drunk lavishly. For reflection, how is Jesus calling you, especially in the midst of your brokenness? To love the other, listen to the other, live given to the other. What would it look like in your life if you chose the way of being abundantly compassionate with each other, co-suffering with each other, so you could be part of the abundant healing of each other? Devotion 29, Zacchaeus' Brokenness. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today. So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. Luke 19:5-6. When she stopped returning my calls, my texts, I'm not going to lie, it kind of felt like I'd lost a compass, like I'd lost my way home to a safe place. I couldn't get over the anxiety of feeling lost, abandoned, unwanted, left. Turns out that when you're ghosted, you're the one who wants to up and disappear. I didn't eat for days. Anxiety can make for a strict diet. Maybe part of me wondered if I stopped eating, didn't open my mouth, I could fade away, make myself in the pain of being me, invisible. Sometimes when you look in the mirror, it's self-hatred staring back at you. I'd looked in the mirror long, turn away when everything started to blur. How had I failed so miserably again? Botched it completely again, hurt someone deeply again. Sometimes when your relationships all feel broken, the person you want to break up with most is yourself. Sometimes the hardest person for whom to hold out any hope for change is yourself. It can feel like there's nowhere to go to escape the sting of rejection. I dreamed about flying to Iceland. Instead, I drove into town and bought groceries at Food Basics. You know the people who'd avoid you in the grocery store? Who'd look the other way if they saw you in the parking lot? People who'd mutter and not turn the other cheek but turn away, act like they don't know you? I kept having painful Zacchaeus moments. Zacchaeus moments are those moments of rejection, when we feel as disliked and shunned as a tax collector. When we feel like no one would come to our house, ask us for lunch, or look for us in the crowd. Tax collectors collected no one's warmth, friendship, or esteem. And yet 6 times the socially rejected tax collectors are mentioned in the book of Luke. And every single time, positively. It's a pattern to weave the ends of your frayed heart to. Jesus is drawn to the rejected, and the rejected are drawn to Jesus. And it's the people who draw themselves up as the respectable who find Jesus repelling. Why? Because when you feel basically respectable, you want religion. And when you know you feel the brokenness of rejection, you want the gospel. In religion, it's the respectable who search for a God to impress. But in the gospel, it's God who searches for the broken-hearted, rejected, to save. The only respectable who become Christians are those who realize they aren't. It's not that even the rejected are accepted by Jesus, but it's that only the rejected are accepted by Jesus. Only those who confess that using their self-sufficiency and supposed morality as seeming saviors is as sinful as any other sin. Only when you realize you aren't respectable, that you are entirely no better than the rejected, only then are you entirely accepted. Jesus states it with relieving audacity straight into the ache of our hearts when he turns to Zacchaeus in his moment. Today, salvation has come to this house. Not that salvation will come, but salvation has come because Jesus is here. You don't have to perform or be perfect or pretend. You have to know a person, one who pursues you. Jesus doesn't give Zacchaeus a checklist before he'll show up. Christ just shows up, right where we are, right in the midst of our brokenness. Salvation isn't about keeping rules. It's about keeping at rest in the work of Christ, keeping company with the grace of Christ, keeping your joy through the strength of Christ. Salvation is a way of seeing. seeing who your Savior always is. Like Zacchaeus, there's a way to position your heart to see Christ in all things. Zacchaeus had to climb the limbs of a tree. We get to climb over everything else in our lives, to turn the pages of scriptures and sit with him who wants to be with us. Abundant acceptance is possible. Zacchaeus had to make himself look less than respectable to see Jesus. And we get to be seen as less than respectable to actually be more like Jesus. Abundant joy is possible. If we positioned our lives to see Jesus, we get to go to the rejected, eat with the less than respected, make time for the rundown and the reviled and the rebuffed. Abundant fulfillment is possible. Zacchaeus had turned around to go Christ's way, and thus turned around his attitude toward money. We get to be born again and have Christ cut our umbilical security cord to money and status and hollow meaninglessness. Abundant freedom is possible. And these are the words of Christ to the brokenhearted, all of us stuck in a string of Zacchaeus moments. I must stay at your house today. He must. The brokenhearted healer must stay with the broken. His home is with you. So this is our Zacchaeus moment, us the broken, abundantly accepted. Communion with Christ, koinonia with the King, who comes to stay with the busted and rejected, and we receive him joyfully. Because Jesus tenderly claims the rejected, bandages the bruised, carries the exiled, names the unwanted his, and holds the hemorrhaging close. Those shoved to the outside know the gentleness of his embrace. Those stabbed in the back find their hearts cupped. Those avoided and abandoned feel an intimate communion with the wounded healer. The fellowship of the broken have fellowship with the brokenhearted healer. And by his wounds, we are healed. The courage to embrace suffering is a way to embrace him, the one who never stops suffering with us, Emmanuel, the with God, who stretches out his arms on a cross to show us his scars too, to expose his heart too, to be vulnerable too, to hold us and literally save us too. The with God holds whatever our unspoken broken is and cups our faces and whispers, me too. The with God is the me too God. And when he must come to stay at my house today, when he must come stay with me, no matter how many painful Zacchaeus moments I have known, I am abundantly found. I am always already home. For reflection, what painful, broken-hearted Zacchaeus moments would you like to invite Jesus into today? Moments of feeling rejected, belittled, dismissed. Jesus wants to make his home with you in those places. How are you positioning your life, the abundant life, like Zacchaeus so that you see Christ in all things, even if it costs you something? Devotion 30, Christ's givenness. For the Lord your God is a compassionate God. He will not fail you nor destroy you nor forget the covenant with your fathers which he swore to them. Deuteronomy 4:31, New American Standard. He'd woken up looking ashen when our 2016 was hardly more than 24 hours old. Gray, translucent skin, sunken eyes like bruised blue half moon, his shirt hanging angular off bony shoulders. Yet the kid never left the table without asking for second and third heaping helpings. A robust farm boy of 13, eating like he was famished, and yet fading away. I don't know when I knew, but I knew before the doctor on call told us. Snow had started to fall, large flakes, lazy and soft and soundless. The farmer squeezes my hand. All God's plans are always good, and all his ways are always for us. I know it. The words aren't some cheap cliche, but are our dying creed. And I swallow hard around that stone lodged up in my throat. Didn't really hit me, he says, until the doctor came in and sat down on the end of his bed and said it so quiet. You have type 1 diabetes. You'll need 4 to 6 insulin injections a day for the rest of your life. Oh, this isn't the flu, and we beat the virus. There's no cure. No pills, no diet, no exercise will ever make it go away. I squeeze his weathered hand back. You can feel like you've been flattened by a bus. You can feel like everyone else is mapping out their future and you're sitting there with the map, looking for the red arrow that points to where in the world you even are now. You can make your plans, but it's God's plan that happened. You can blink and the landscape of your whole life can change. And how do you not look a little bit lost? I feel like we've just joined a club, I say. This club of the hurting in hidden ways and those beating back the grave. We can't rank or minimize suffering, and we must simply embrace suffering and all those suffering. And it's okay to not be okay, to not feel strong, to carry an unspoken broken. It's okay to be real and grieve losses and hold each other tight. He and I hold on to each other in the dim light of the hospital rooms, alarms going off down the hall. Later, Malachi pushes himself up in the hospital bed to tell us something I will never forget. Looks like God knew my story was going to be a bit different. That's sort of cool. He smiles quietly, nods like he's telling places in me of forgotten things. And this hard thing's going to make me rely on him more. That's even more cool. I nod. Yeah, son. Cool. Never fear the moments you imagine will freeze you. Unexpected blasts of cold can be what draws you nearer to the flame of his love. Darn the cold. Thank God for the fire. Welcome to the club of those braving the cold blasts in 1,000 daily ways. He's real. The kid's nodding his head. I've never felt God so real. I want to tell the kid that's what happens when you get pushed out of the shallow end. When you find yourself in the real deep end, that's when you know he's real. Adios, shallow end. Now you live where you can't touch bottom, and you must swallow God. I can see that, Mom, he's smiling. The hardest things can be the greatest gift. I can see that. The kid seeing things I forget, things that can feel like a mirage at times for me. He's feeling solid in things that I've let slip through my rope-burned fingers. He's holding on to it now, like a lifeline in his brave hand. Malachi grins over at me, needle still in hand. I'm glad. I'm glad God gave me joy. Oh, I want to write it down on my hand to remember. Brave joy is the magnet for everything you need. The boy knows things I need to relearn. I sit on the edge of his bed trying to read the kid's eyes, my heart trying to braille read what his heart's really saying by the way his eyes make my heart feel. The kid's got no idea that the new normal means heading down to the pediatric hospital, where he'll sit with his needles in the waiting room with rows of brave kids, with bald, gleaming heads sitting on their mama's laps. And you'll look into those mama's eyes and be loving this club of the broken with all your heart. Every one of us, in one hurting way or another, is in this club. The grace that's in this moment is your manna. Wish for the past and you drink poison. worry about the future and you eat fire. Stay in this moment and you eat the manna needed for now. When I stand out in the hallway, reading about how after a year or so doctors may allow an insulin pump, and thinking about stirring pots of chili with one hand and giving injections with the other, refusing to be sucked into the worry of the future, I read, type 1 diabetes may reduce the normal lifespan by 10 to 15 years. And I think of 10 full spins around the sun, 10 more puffs over birthday candles, 10 more first days of spring, and how March sun feels on your face. I want him to wake every morning. I want him to have those full 10. I want all the hurting and brave in the club that is all of us to beat the odds, beat back the dark, and find their hope against despair. I want us to pummel worry with worship. All of us to make every move with courage while everybody else moves on. I want this club to inhale fresh air and have another glass of orange juice right now and taste the phenomenon of being and feel wind through the hair and believe that what you love will come to you in your hour of need. And this one glorious day is a miracle. Why do we get two? It falls like fresh snow in the middle of the night, like the steady beat of the heart, like the rhythm of our being. This life of ours is not our own. He owns our life. This life of ours is not our own. His life is our own. This life of ours is not our own. We are his own. And I turn from the night window and the falling snow to our boy sleeping in the hospital bed, the second day of the new year. There's the club of the broken who ask, so what if we suffer? Here is not our home. Suffering is a gift he entrusts, and he can be trusted to make this suffering into a gift. Stay in this moment and eat the manna needed for now. His eyelashes tremble a bit in his sleep. Even in dreams, all of life is holy ground. Come morning, the snow gives way to the light, like the abundant hope of a lifting shroud. For reflection, where feels broken in your life right now? What would it mean to consider suffering as a gift and to believe that God can be trusted to make this suffering into a gift? How are you living like brave joy is the magnet for the abundance of everything you need? Part 4. How can the brokenhearted find real communion? Devotion 31, the givers. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Luke 6:38. When Amy got up to the drive-thru window, she flicked her dark hair back, leaned out of her minivan, and said to the girl behind the glass, "And can I go ahead and pay for the car behind me?" Then she turned to me with this knowing bright glint in her eye. "You know, it goes this way every time. When you give it forward, you get paid back the most." When David, just the other day, found Russell curled up on the floor, sobbing behind a ticket counter at Reno Tahoe International Airport, David kneeled down, reached straight through Russell's autism, gently touched his shoulder, and assured him he'd help reroute him to make his destination. And when he found a new flight, David returned to hold and rock Russell, even bringing the pilot to reassure him they could arrange seating for Russell's comfort, and the crew would give safe passage. He need not be afraid. Every one of us is a member of humanity, We support all of our members and stop the dismembering of society. Just show up and show the grace you're made of. Stand apart from an overheated world through showing understanding. Show you give a rip by giving a bit of your heart. Christina, a single mom, flat broke, sleeping on the floor of her kid's room and filling her fridge with food stamp groceries, said, "When you don't know if you're good for the rent, it's easy to get thinking that life isn't good. When you're obsessed with your own despair, it's easy to get depressed with your own life. Sometimes the only way to get out of your skin is to get into someone else's story. Sometimes helping other people helps our own wounds. Sometimes the way out of your misery is to help someone else out of theirs. It's strange how that works. Volunteering can be a way to joy finding you voluntarily. The secrets of the world work in upside-down, unlikely ways, because the maker of this world is unlike anything we've ever known. The maker has this wildly warped and holy sense of humor. Every volunteer place rejected Christina, because no place wanted her kids coming with her. When no one wants you, it can be hard to want to be you. But Christina talked to herself, because we always need to talk to ourselves more than we listen to ourselves, because our soul needs a truth coach or it will be a lie factory. Even when I feel like a complete loser, is there something tiny I'm still good at? And she realized, I know how to cook a great meal on very little money. So Christina cooked up an idea. She emailed friends. Every Wednesday night I'm feeding people. Widows, the elderly, singles, the lonely. Everyone was important enough. She wouldn't focus on what she couldn't give, but on what she could give and who she could give to. Her food stamps bought anything on sale, and with no recipes in hand, just the vision to make the greatest feast with the least amount of money, Christina did it. Sometimes the least in hand can make the greatest happiness in the heart, because having much in hand doesn't make as much difference as having much in heart. When it looks like you have nothing to give naturally, look to God to give the supernatural. When the lies came, why would anyone show up at your place? Why would your friends bring anyone to you? She ignored them. When you're depressed, you can feel like you have nothing to bring to the table but a mess. But Wednesday at 6 p.m., people came to her table. Complete strangers walking into my apartment and letting me feed them. By the end of the night, I'd fed a ton of strangers with my tiny little budget and my tiny little kids. When you give, when you don't have a lot, God gives you a lot more of himself. When you give because you've claimed a stake in your Father's abundant world, you get an abundant world of joy. When your giving and living debunks the myth of scarcity and embraces the mystery of abundance, you get the joy of intimacy with God. After the last person left, she closed the door and started sobbing. But for the first time in a long time, it wasn't tears of desperation. I was crying like a broken little girl who just experienced her first glimmer of hope and healing, she said. It's the broken who become healers. It's the givers and gifters who get to recover from the hard knocks and hard roads. It's the givers and gifters who get to take back their joy. It's the gifters and givers who get to overcome whatever overwhelms, because love gives, and that's how love wins, and our God is the giver who loved the world so much that he gave. Be an Amy, a David, a Christina, a broken healer, a giver, a gifter. Be the bread so broken and given that a hungry world yearns for more of the taste of such glory. For reflection, where have you felt too broken for your gifts to be wanted? And where do you feel like you have nothing naturally to give, but God is asking you to let him give the supernatural. Where have you been living the myth of scarcity? And God is asking.